bandwidth and hosting for the British Tech Network is provided by UK2.net. Innovative, affordable, and reliable web hosting.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the photo show from the British Tech Bash. Yay! Everyone's here. I'm looking out at a sea of faces, all looking at me, and all I can think of somewhere, there's an asylum missing people.
Care in the community.
I'd like to thank Ewan for getting us all here today and putting all this on, and his lovely wife as well for tolerating us all. But there you go. So let's go on with, on with the shows. First of all, the Olympic photographer goes amateur, apparently. There's, if any of you guys have seen it, there's some photos. Alex and Chris. We're not here.
I'm right here.
Actually, you're right. Joining us this week, who can't be here for various reasons, Alex because he's sick, we have Mr. Alex Fox over down here in London.
Good afternoon, I think it is. Well done, thank you.
And far across the Atlantic, we have Mr. Chris Forsen from Ars Technica joining us as well.
Oi!
Oi!
And we have some other people here, as I said. Oh, dear. So anyway, we have some... The Americans have released their official, apparently, Olympic photography, and everyone's going mad because of how amateur they look. Basically, my performance now. Has anyone seen these pictures?
No. Tell us about them,
mate. Oh, come on, come on. You guys must have seen them.
What are you talking about?
I've seen them.
What do you think, Don?
Yeah, they weren't very impressive, I have to say. They were very basic, to be honest.
Very.
And very some strange positions they were getting the athletes into as well.
Oh, it's that kind of sports stuff, isn't it? Now, Paul, where's Paul? Paul told me... Where's he hiding? There he is. You told me... James.
Oh, dear, my God.
Carl. Yeah. Carl, breathe in. You can do this. Don't worry, there's
you told me, yes, James, sorry, I'm getting Paul's and James and Peter's, everyone mixed up, some tell. You told me there was a reason why you think they look so amateurish.
From what I read, yeah.
Microphone, dude.
Sorry.
And now James walks to the microphone.
From what I read, the...
Closer.
The guy who was given the job of taking the pictures was only given 20 minutes with all the athletes... And the team managers were very sort of on his case about what he could and couldn't do with the athletes. So he had limited tools and limited time, and he's got slated for it, but he did his best. I mean, it might look shit, but you know.
Who's got the green counter?
First edit.
Green counter.
They might not look that good.
They look like stock photos.
So Chris, you have you seen them over there?
Yeah, I mean, I'm looking at them, and I don't think they look amateurish at all. I think they look...
That's Carl urinating, by the way.
I mean, the lighting, the composition is I think, excellent. And I think what it boils down to is some of the backgrounds look janky. And, you know, really, that's the kind of stuff that would typically be fixed in post. Whether it was a conscious decision to not do that sort of thing or what exactly that was, I can't say. But, I mean, to say that it just looks like the work of a rank amateur, I think is really unfair because I think the lighting and composition and everything, I mean, every other aspect except for, you know, some of the backgrounds looks really good. So, I mean, there's a theory presented here that it was done on purpose to sort of like... you know, give it some of this sort of like take away some of the you know, kind of look behind the curtain kind of thing. Maybe that's it. I don't really know. I've definitely seen shots like this where the photographer purposely includes, you know, some of the lighting or, you know, some of the props or other the background things in there on purpose to kind of give it that look. So maybe that's what they're going for. I mean, maybe, I don't know. But I don't think it's really fair to say it just like they look like totally amateur. I think it just looks like they need
some editing. She really doesn't look like she wants to be there, does she? I mean, you look at the look, you look at the faces, and that woman there and the one above her, the shot putter, they really don't look like they want to be there at all. So where do you start?
Well, they want to be in London, don't they? So kicking off, getting it all done. What do you reckon, Alex? Have you had a chance to look at them?
Yeah, I did. I mean, firstly, is there any Americans near enough, Carl, that if I'm really rude about Americans, Carl can get hit?
Yes!
Yes, there is!
Okay, so if that's the case, let's begin.
I think that was a yes.
Right. To be honest, if you looked at a lot of the stuff that I put out, you know, obviously it looks great. But if you look at the original files that I shoot on a Friday afternoon when I really don't want to be there, especially things like torn paper backgrounds, I think, you know what, I can fix that. No one will ever know. To me, it looks like the guy has done it on a Friday afternoon. As Chris said, he had 20 minutes and it was, I'll fix this later. And he sent out the wrong folder. That's all it looks like, because I could do exactly the same thing. If I sent out the A folder, I'd look an amateur. If I sent out the B folder, everyone would think I was great, and I think that's all that's happened. The composition's fine. It's nothing that can't be fixed. And if Americans are really crap at taking photos, so please can someone hit Carl?
Get off, Tweezer! Ow, first.
Okay.
Well, so... So you reckon he sent the wrong folder, do you? And now he's had to stick with it for embarrassment's sake.
But the thing is, you know, he was sending this to people's desks, you know. So you send them a file of pictures, they pick the ones they want. And to be honest, sometimes I do it with the press. I get them to fix the ones they want fixed because I'm not sure what they want. So I give them the rawest picture I can, and if they want to tidy up a background or cut it out or do something silly with it, let them do it, because I don't want to do it to 100 pictures when they're only going to use one. And that's quite often what happens, and someone along the line has thought, you know what, let's have a bit of a laugh at this fella's expense and send out the raw files, and that's what's happened.
Do you agree, Ewan?
Well, I mean, I shoot portraits of people corporately for, I mean, it used to be business cards, you know, those awful, I've got my own picture on my business card stuff. But it happened to me on Sunday. I was down shooting for a firm. Customer turns up of the firm and someone says, I want a picture with the customer. And the first word out of the customer's mouth are, I've got to go in 5 minutes. And then it's like, so I've got 5 minutes to take your picture with someone who's paying me. They're going to smile. You're not going to smile. And also, in 5 minutes, you'll be gone and I can't do it again if I've disappeared. If you know, once you've disappeared. And you run the risk. And I've got to say, I'm lucky that I haven't done that. And people would say, well, okay, you haven't done that because you're a good photographer. It's luck. Because there is always going to be that time where you don't get everything exactly right. Something blows out, etc., that kind of stuff. And it's a difficult, difficult thing to do when your arse is clenching and the guy's got 5 minutes and he doesn't want his picture taken in the first place.
Mm-hmm. Well, as Missy says, spray and pray.
In 5 minutes. Well, actually, no, that's twice as long as I need. Dude, microphone!
Sorry. I think you're all being very harsh, and you look excellent for Instagram photos taken on an Android phone.
Oh, the iPhone.
iPhone's now. Also in the... another story this week. The UK is concerned from a new UK policy regarding copyright over amongst photographers. Apparently, the UK government issued an updated copyright policy statement today, or the other week, sorry, that's intended to modernise copyright law in the digital era. Sweeping definitions of orphan works and extended collectible licences could allow companies to buy huge chunks of content without compensating the original authors. Apparently, you can opt out of this service, but that's the only way you're going to get out of having your work stolen, so to speak, is by actively opting out. But to do that, you've got to give them all your details. Carl, what do you reckon of that, Alex?
Well, I'm registered with certain companies that handle my legal requirements anyway. It's because I'm in the art world, so most of my copyrights are very, very complicated, but there's loads of places that will do it for you, and the only time they ever get any money is if someone tries to rip you off. So I just advise everyone, if you're a professional, you've got it covered. The problem you've got is if you're an amateur, and to be honest, if you're an amateur, you're not in it to make money out of it, then it really shouldn't matter too much.
Got something to say, Steve?
Yeah, no, Alex, I want to throw something at you. And just
oh, do you? You're going to have a bloody good shot from there, then.
A brick.
Just to see how this flies. If I wanted to use your... Professionally, if I wanted to use one of your pieces in my in my professional life, if I approached you to find out how much it was, you'd probably kind of get... you'd understand that I was trying to use it, and therefore you'd suddenly look at my company and see any if we used it unofficially or officially. So what we might do is just use it and hope you might not find it. Wouldn't it be easier if we had a system, which is what this is bringing in, which is trying to make it a lot simpler for companies to go out and use material without approaching the person and finding out that it's...
But then that's what I'm saying. They're cutting out paying the original photographer. It's the person who's collected all the stuff together that's getting paid.
Well, I was thinking it was simpler than that, and they were trying to simplify actual payment for using products rather than making it over expensive.
The piece I read, it sounded like they could charge, the people licensing out your stuff can charge whatever they want and might not necessarily pay you anything in return for it. So that sounds fair.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of places, what you do, you add it to like a stock library. In the old days, what happened is a stock library paid you a percentage of whatever they got for the image. But what you can do, and this is the what they're trying to move to, the stock library will pay you an amount for the image, and you've then sold on the copyright to that place, and they can do whatever they want with it. A lot of people do operate that way.
That's not totally true, though, is it? I mean, it depends whether you mark it as licensed or royalty-free. If it's royalty-free, once it's out there, it's done. If you mark it as licensed, they are bound to give it for single issue, so you can specify the publications it can and can't go in. I mean, I submitted a stock image a few years ago of a guy with a gun dog and a gun doing a pheasant shoot, and I said, do you mind if I take your picture? And he said, that's fine, as long as it's not going in any hunting, anti-hunting stuff. So when I submitted that to the stock image site, I had to specify that it was not able to be used in anything that was anti-hunting publications. And that's within the license. Therefore, I couldn't issue it as royalty-free.
Yeah, sure. But what I'm saying is certain pictures, to be honest, the ones that I don't think are any good, I give them to stock library and I say, look, here, I don't know what it is, give me £500 and you can... paper your toilet walls with it if you want. I don't really give a damn, and that's what I do. I literally sell on everything. I don't want anything to do with it. I don't even want my name on them.
So that's royalty free then?
Well, it's royalty free. Well, it's not really. It's royalty free from me to them. They can then put any restriction on it they want. I've literally sold over the copyright, if you like. Not made it completely copyright free. I've actually sold them the right to the copyright, and they can specify what they want or do whatever they want with it. So it is slightly different.
What about you, Chris? You got anything like this over there?
Not that I'm aware of.
No? Well, what say?
I mean, nothing that sounds exactly the same as what they're trying to do here. I mean, obviously, you know, there's a lot of stock photography and things like that, but this sounds a little bit different.
A bit shady.
I think the grey area, though, is when someone has paid you to take an image, who owns that image? And that's the real issue. I've just done a wedding, and the place where the wedding was shot is notorious for ripping off the florists and the photographers. And I've issued the images to the couple and said, my only condition of you having these, despite the fact that they paid me to do it, is that you are not to give any of these free of charge back to that facility. Now... the question begs whether if they've paid me a sum of money to shoot their wedding, whether they own the images or I do, whether I can restrict them in giving those images back to that facility or not. Now, as the law stands, I can, because those captured images are mine, not theirs, no matter how much they paid me. If you go back to printing presses, when you used to produce printing plates for machines rather than doing lithography and that kind of stuff, the plates that were generated or the embossing and those kind of stuff were the ownership of the printer, not the ownership of the customer. They were charged for the production of them, but the ownership of those items remained with the printer.
Did you agree that up front or not?
It's irrelevant. That's the thing is once I've taken an image, as law stands at the moment, that image is mine, and even if I give it to someone else, I'm giving them it under license.
Yeah, well, there's two licenses. There's copyright and image right, and they're two completely separate entities. You can control the copyright forever and a day, but you can't control the image right. but the image right is only given to the person paying for the image. They can use it in the way that was intended, but that's the image right you've given them by payment. You've not given them carte blanche.
Exactly, and no matter how much they pay me, I'm still licensing what they can do with that right.
Yeah, exactly.
Here's the image. It's yours. As long as you only give it to your friends and family and don't give it to any commercial organisations, that is the licence with which I'm issuing it. And they can give it to any person they like within that licence of friends or family, but they can't give it to commercial organisations because that's the licence that I've specified.
Got something to say, James?
Yeah, is it somewhat obfuscated when you take an image in a venue, because the venue can hold copyright on the location, can't they not?
They can hold copyright on the location, and if I then put that into a stock image library, I'd have to specify it as licensed, and I'd have to get a license from them to allow me to sell that image. But if I'm taking it at a public venue where it's been hired and it's only for private use of the individual that I've taken the picture for, the image is still mine, and their license of that venue is irrelevant as long as it's not used for commercial purpose.
The only thing a venue can do is restrict your usage. They can't use it themselves.
Well, that's exactly it, because you're taking image under licence in the first place. You have a licence to be there. There's a great case, I can't remember the name of it, but it's a guy who goes into a house, having been invited into the house on a previous occasion, and does something, you know, craps on the carpet, whatever it is. But
he took a picture of that?
Yeah, maybe. If you go Google, mate, you'll find it. The guy in the case where he was prosecuted said, a license to enter is not a license to slide down the banister, and that's the separation between the two. I get license to enter a public premises or private premises. They are not by default giving me license to take an image when I'm in there, and if I do take an image, they can legally restrict me with it.
And they letting you back in that place yet, Ewan?
I clean my own mess up.
I got a question about ownership, actually, with what happens about Facebook and things like that, because you were saying how you sell it but you still own it, but then if you put it on Facebook, don't they own it then?
That's a complicated
that really is complicated, because it's whether it's enforced, because it's civil. So Facebook, though, by default, anything that you post on Facebook, your agreement with Facebook is that they are the owners of that image. Now, I would argue that what they can only you can sign any contract you like, it's whether you can enforce it or not, but the license element of that is absolutely theirs. Whether they can control an ownership of it, man, that's a big argument. That's a long week in court.
Joining us, we have Netta, who makes a living from iPhonography, is it?
Yeah, that's right.
So where do you display your work?
Well, this is interesting, because iPhonography has grown from social networking sites. So a lot of us wouldn't have careers in that area unless we'd posted our work on social networking sites such as Facebook. I recently had some of my images nicked from Instagram and posted as the work of another artist in Japan. And that was actually pointed out to me by a friend who did a bit of police work and discovered that this guy was actually nicking a lot of people's work from Instagram. And I didn't feel it was a really very big deal. The guy wasn't selling my work. He was obviously just kind of wanting everybody to think he was a great photographer. But another artist, Siona Fuller, who's a very good American iPhone photographer, had his work nicked from Instagram by Vogue Spain. They actually took one of his images, several of his images, from his Instagram feed, jiggled them around a bit and reposted them with new names as their work. So that's a little bit disturbing.
The air just disappeared out of my garden.
What I wanted to ask you, because I'm not clear on the whole copyright thing, and I'm a professional artist, is if something gets posted on Facebook and it's Facebook's possession, is it just that version of the file, or is it? For instance, you might put it up there at 500 by 500 pixels, a really low res. And you might put it in a certain colourway. Do they just own that version of the photograph, or do they own every version of the photograph? Do you see the distinction I'm making?
Yeah.
Well, Chris wasn't even clear that
Facebook's terms actually give them ownership of the actual image itself, but merely all the rights needed to be able to copy them to their content delivery network,
yes,
serve them to users,
yes,
et cetera.
It's a functional agreement rather than an enforced agreement, necessarily, perhaps.
Yeah, that was my instinct, is that the only reason that they have these very convoluted legal instructions is because they need to know that you're giving them permission to post your work to their sites. I'm not sure whether any of that would actually stand up if you wanted to contest it any further than that.
Right. Sure, there'll be a case soon enough.
I think you've got to think about the fact, why have you posted it on Facebook? You posted it on Facebook as a transmission medium.
Yeah.
Therefore, there has to be a fee, in inverted commas, that goes along with that. But they're not making any money from it. But you're agreeing to the fact that they are okay to send it wherever they want rather than wherever you want.
Sure, yeah.
But I think what you're talking about before with the guy, I mean, that's clearly theft, isn't it?
Well, we just told him.
They're
just
stealing
reminded
from you or stealing from Facebook.
I just reminded him they weren't his pictures, and a few of my friends did the same, and he took them down. So I think I'd have been a bit peed off if they'd have turned up.
Carl, control yourself.
Placemats in the pound shop, but they didn't, so that's okay.
So there's a new camera. Moving on, there's a new camera been announced by Samsung, the EX2F, a premium combat camera with an f1.4 lens, 12 megapixel, 3-inch swiveling LCD, ISO up to 12,800, dual stabilization, whatever that means, hot shoe mount, raw and full manual shooting, 1030, 30 frames per second HD video, and Wi-Fi features. Now, as I always ask when one of these things comes out, and it's going to be $549 when it's released in August, anyone's interested in this?
Answer.
I like the Wi-Fi features.
Microphone. Show us a picture.
I like the Wi-Fi features. It was interesting coming today to the bash because there was lots of people on the way here from all over the country travelling different ways. And last year, there was lots of photos taken, but we didn't see them on the way here. This year, if you just follow the hashtag, you see lots of photos being taken on the setup, on the preparation, and that jump of suddenly photos being taken going straight onto Twitter is a lot more this year than last year. So I really want a really decent camera that broadcasts instantly to Twitter or Wi-Fi. That would be a good thing for me. If this new camera does that type of Wi-Fi integration that allows that, I'm happy.
Excuse me, I've already got one. It's called my iPhone.
You are the people that... this is the thing. We had a conversation on the way up in that a lot more people are using iPhones for photography. And I think the next stage that we'll lose out are the bridge cameras, the compacts. People won't buy those anymore because people are buying iPhones. And more people will actually buy DSLRs, because it's a better way of taking a photo.
Mm-hmm.
I was at the sports day yesterday.
Don't tell everyone you won a gold medal again.
No, I won't, because you've just sold everyone.
Thank you.
I won the dad's race. Even though I do no physical fitness, and the people people there put their proper trainers on and everything, they were well in for it.
Bro, you shouldn't break into the orphanage and then offer to join in then, should you, mate?
Alex, what do you think of this new camera?
Oh, look, if you'd have sent me the dock, I'd have had a better idea. What I think of this new camera, making it up on the spot, is whatever Steve said.
Okay.
A Wi-Fi camera.
Is it waterproof? Well, yeah, it needs to be waterproof today. Chris?
This is a pretty compelling package. I mean, 12 megapixels, I could get away with less, but it's a plenty of resolution for most average users. The lens is really bright for even this type of zoom, especially considering it's got a larger than average sensor. You got ISO up to 12,800, which is pushing the limits of a point and shoot, I'm sure. But it's even got a hot shoe mount. I mean, this actually looks pretty similar to one of the Olympus has a kind of a high end point and shoot that's kind of similar. It reminds me a lot of that. The metal body, the dual dial controls. I think they've really hit a lot of the right notes with this particular model. The swiveling viewfinder, so you can use you can do some unusual framing or composition, or holding it over your head to shoot over crowds, things like that. So it's got a lot in a small package. I think the Wi-Fi thing is, you know, we've talked about this in the past, but it's, you know, the time has definitely come, and I think we all agree it's finally time that it's here. I guess more than anything, I'm just wondering, like, what kind of access does it have? You know, how easy is it to shoot a picture and get it online, and where can you get it? Like, what kind of built-in software does it have to make that easy?
Well,
I think that's my biggest question mark.
That's missing at the moment from the piece I read. But do you reckon if anyone's got an iPhone, this camera's going to interest them? Probably not, right?
No.
Well, let's do a test. There's lots of iPhones here. Anyone with an iPhone, this camera interests them in the slightest, if you can remember the stats.
No.
Hello, Sarah. Sarah's just walked in. No, so no. Everyone's shaking heads.
No.
Well, there's a key thing to remember here, though. The iPhone market is a total, since it was initiated in 1997, of 250 million devices. That's it. Android phones with cameras in them are being activated at 400,000. Is it a day or a week?
It's a million a day.
It's a million a day.
Yeah,
that's crazy. So what you're looking at is someone who's making a camera here, and Samsung said that they were going to double their camera compact camera market by the end of 2013 to 500,000 units. So there's a significant more number of iPhones out there, which is infinitesimal to the number of Android phones, and the market that they're trying to get into is actually a drop in the ocean of both. So this is a great spec. It's got Wi-Fi coverage. It lets you post up. And it's nice as a camera. If you walk out and you want a camera, then the question's going to be whether you sell this. And you've only got to sell 100,000 units, 200,000 units, 500,000 units. And 500,000 units is what they were going for as their mass increase. They don't make the same quantity of... The comparison, I think, is lost. The market is different. But I agree with Nettie. My iPhone 4S is my day-out camera and video. Not interested in carrying anything else around anymore.
I've got two DSLRs. I haven't picked them up for nearly 3 years.
It's the creative
possibilities of the iPhone as well that attract me.
Feel free to ship one my way.
Chris won.
Dude's still shooting with a 20D, I mean.
Okay, let's move on to this week's six things. Hi, guys. We are celebrating an Independence Day this week, obviously in the States. I was wondering what tips, tricks, and tools you could suggest for taking photos of fireworks. And
glitter.
That's from Buddy of Florida.
No, it's not. It's from Missy.
No, that's not. From Buddy.
Oh, right.
It says Buddy right on it.
Yeah, I know. Someone changed my doc.
Did you actually meet him in Florida?
Who said that?
That would be Andy.
No, it's the voice in your head. No one heard it other than you.
I do worry about that sometimes, strangely enough. Alex, you got any tips?
Yeah, do it at night.
Oh.
Do it at night, okay. That's one.
What's amazing me is we've got a bunch of supposed tech users and experts here. None of them are just at the sodding height of the microphone stands.
They're set for Carl.
How about a tripod?
Andy Lee's just made his point looking like a diseased John Cleese.
That is my default look, by the way.
Again!
So come on,
I need one hand to hold a beer.
Right, here we go. Like, do it at night because of that almost got a giggle last time I said it, so I'll try it again. I don't know.
Do it
at
night.
It's a proper camera. I'd actually get the speed set quite well on the camera, actually, because of fireworks tend to move, and they very, very quickly just become lines as opposed to individual pieces of sparkliness.
So what do you sell it at for at night and fast-moving fireworks?
Oh, that's a difficult one, seeing as I haven't got a clue without looking at my camera. Something like a 50th of a second is probably enough, but I would... I mean, funny enough, if you used, it sounds silly, but if you use things let's say the built-in flash on when you're using a point and shoot, quite often, obviously the flash is going to do absolutely nothing, but it actually helps very much in getting a good a night shot, because it tends to get the speed down to, or up rather, to the speed you want and various things like that. So it's actually worth a go with a point and shoot, leaving it on flash mode and just letting it do its own thing, but with the flash going off. It doesn't actually make sense, but fireworks tend to be very, very bright compared to the background that you're shooting against.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know if you notice firework shots, but you'll always notice that they look like they're always in a brilliant black sky, even though in reality most of the time they're not. So you have got an awful lot of leeway because you're shooting something that's very, very bright and very, very contrasty. So actually an automatic setting with a flash on will quite often give you exactly the picture you want to get.
Also, don't a lot of automatic compact type cameras have like a fireworks setting? I think my one does, actually.
Yeah, is that next to the P?
Maybe.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Chris, any tips?
It's next to O and
A couple. Here's what I've done every time I've shot fireworks. I've used manual focus, set up on a tripod, manual exposure, and I just had the tripod set up with the smallest setting so I could sit down on the ground, have the camera right in front of me, get the camera angled up where the fireworks are going off. With film this was harder, but with digital, you know, you can take a few shots on the first couple of fireworks and get yourself set up much better. With film you kind of had to go with some exposures that have worked in the past and hope they work for this time. So it's a little bit different situation when you're shooting digitally. But yeah, just on a snapshot camera, you can set the focus to landscape mode or infinity mode, and it'll just lock the focus all the way to infinity. That'll be totally fine for fireworks. ISO speed, people think it's dark, so they tend to think, I want a really high ISO, but actually it's better to shoot with a low ISO, like 100 or 200. Aim up the sky. Get your manual exposure set. The way, once you get it locked in once, you can use that for the rest of the fireworks and just shoot away.
Mm-hmm. Ewan, find anyone to add? Anyone to add?
If you, I got a moment, like an epiphany a few years ago, and I was flying into Birmingham Airport on November the 5th from a job in Scotland, and I was thinking about the fact there's going to be loads of fireworks, this must be really interesting for airline pilots, and you don't realise how high these things don't go. I mean, they're literally 100, 200 feet at most, and they're a long, long, long way below you. And if you look at commercial fireworks, commercially available fireworks for punters, they're going to be about 200 feet. Well, the thing to do is prepare. So look out, pace out 200 feet, set your focus on that and mark it with a piece of tape. And then you've got that ability. Then that means that what you can do is crank your f-stop right back, because the variability at 200 feet on your f-stop is going to be a lot less than if you're trying to get for 200 or 300 feet variance and you go to try and get up to f-11, f-14, mm-hmm. etc. And the other thing, I've forgotten.
So anyway,
but
you could use a squeaky toy.
Yeah, apparently Chad was saying squeaky toy. I was going to say, I'll come back to it.
Okay,
remote.
Now, you said you had some suggestions.
Yeah, on the iPhone front, you can get tripod mounts to fix your iPod to a tripod, so that's useful. iPhone to a tripod. The Nightcap app is fantastic in low light levels, and you can get real light trails with it. Almost DSLR is a great camera replacement app that you can actually set your light, and then everything else around it can move, and you've actually set your exposure. Slow Shutter Cam, another good one. Pro Camera, very useful app. And I'm a big fan of 6x6, although I haven't tried it with fireworks.
Okay.
And the other thing was, if you go into commercial display, find out who's doing it, and they'll be able to tell you exactly how high those fireworks are going.
They normally just tell me to sod off.
Yeah, they'll tell you. They're usually about 1,000 feet.
Oh, Paul as well?
Right, I'm not a photographer, so I'm probably going to say the wrong words, but this is following on from what you guys were talking about with gigs a couple of weeks ago. When you take photos of fireworks, I mean, I've done it a couple of times because I've done youth group firework events, photographs of fireworks don't do anything for me, but the photographs of people watching fireworks was much more interesting, like what you guys are talking about with gigs last week. And I found I've got like a real cheap and cheerful DSLR, so I don't even know what setting I set it on, but it was something like 10 second lens opening.
Uh-huh.
I found that if you took a picture of the firework going off and then came straight away onto the face of somebody looking at the firework, with the lens still open, you get a really hard shadow on the face, a really bright light colour on the face, but you'd get the fireworks still superimposed through the picture. So you get these really glorious pictures of faces with trails and fireworks all over the place. If you were lucky, you'd get ones that looked like kids' heads were exploding with fireworks, which is probably not what you want at a kids' fireworks event, but the effect was lovely. I don't know if I even know if I could replicate it, but the pictures of faces of kids watching fireworks to me were far more valuable than the fireworks themselves.
So my tip is to just get my little brother to hold the firework as it goes off and take a shot of that, because that's interesting, plus the trip to the emergency room that follows.
Remembering, of course, if you're cold, you're taking fireworks at eye level.
Yeah. Thanks for that. You're lucky you're in London. Anyway.
The taxi ride was here.
Oh, shut up, you.
The taxi ride with Carl. Carl basically took over the taxi.
Well, it's just he got in first.
He had to fold him in half to get him in.
You two are here, so.
It's okay, the sunroof is open.
On to the questions this week. First question. Hi guys, thanks for all your tips on the shows. I was wondering if you could help me a bit. I was wondering what's the best way of shooting. Whoa, that was a lot of rain. What is the best?
No prostate issues there then.
I was wondering what's the best way of shooting rainbows, as sometimes they don't always come out when on the shots I've taken. Anyone? It's gone very quiet all of a sudden.
Take them in the rain.
Don't say. You said that. It's you again. Stop it.
Unicorns.
Unicorns.
The issue's probably metering. So because you're metering on the sky, you'll tend to find that the image will blow out quite a bit. So I would probably take it down 3-4 stops even, maybe. Shoot on raw and you can always correct afterwards. But I would
Did anyone else hear that?
I mean, a rainbow is light, so there's absolutely no reason you can't capture it. The problem is it's the differential between the light that you're trying to capture and the light that's behind it in the sky.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so in that case, I famously photographed quite a good picture, actually, which I managed to sell of a rainbow. But the trick I found is just meter on the rainbow. And because if you shoot in raw, then you can actually split the metering afterwards and adjust it to bring the rainbow out a lot fuller. But at least you know that the middle metering, the exact metering, is on the thing that you want to base the picture on. So I would meter directly off the strongest part of the rainbow.
Well, the trick with rainbows, too, and this is something we've talked about in past shows, is that you know, your eyes are constantly adjusting to the dynamic range as you look around. When you look over here, the light is darker, there's different dynamic range, your brain is automatically compensating for that change. And when you look at a rainbow with your eyes, there's all these colors and it looks amazing. A lot of times when you take a picture of it, you look at the picture and it's like, oh, you can barely see it, it's kind of dull. And the truth is that you're really going to have to do some manual tweaking in Photoshop to really enhance the rainbow section of the image, whether that's local contrast adjustments or, you know, doing some type of, as Alex suggested, you know, getting a good shot in RAW and then doing some multiple kind of development of that and combine the exposures and like kind of an HDR technique.
So it's all RAW. And not JPEG.
And make sure you GPS tag it so when it's gone, you can go and get the pot of gold at the end of it.
Right, oh, that question was from Sarah of London, by the way. I'm not sure if I read that out earlier. Okay, second question. Oh, it's a long one, Greg. Hi, guys. Loving the show, and especially like it when you get a mix of people on. just a quick photo question. I'm one of those people who actually read sections of the manual.
What?
When getting a new camera, and I'd like to know how my camera operates. One thing I've never got my head around is the point of the AF and AE lock button. What does this button do that half pressing the shutter button does not do? As a follow-on question, if relevant, is it operation affected by by different metering and AF modes? Also, God, I've got questions here, isn't there? Also, since the change to British Tech, all the shows are scattered about my iTunes podcast list. Any chance of a BTN prefix to nicely group them all together like they used to be? Plus, where do you find...
That's his question.
It's
from
a question.
Like 3 months
David,
ago.
You've got an answer, mate.
3 months ago, that was.
Well, I thought I'd wait till the bash because I knew you'd be here.
Also, plus, where do I find in info for the bash this summer? And is there still time to get a ticket?
Summer?
It's a bit late now.
If you're listening to this on Tuesday next week, the bash has already happened. You can't get a ticket.
So come on. So he actually reads the world. You're the person that reads the manual. You're who they're printed for then. Okay. So come on.
I think you should give the mic to David and see if he can remember the long-winded explanation I gave him in the pub in London about 2 weeks ago.
Well, I believe that half press and the shutter does do the locks, both of them. So if you wanted to lock the exposure on one part of your scene, but then focus on a different part, you could use it then, I believe. And you can also change the button to do different things, because you can set it to either do or focus lock or exposure lock or both.
I think that about does, right? Does
how
the
do
half press lock the exposure?
Yeah.
It does?
Yeah.
Yeah, if you've got it on exposure lock.
Come on. Debate. Oh, it,
no, I mean, I would say that your huge benefit of AF and EA is studio. So, you know, you set yourself up and you don't want the camera meeting for what you don't want. You can set your exposure lock and your focus lock and then just shoot away if you've got stuff in the same position time after time after time. I would only use it for studio, really, more than anything else.
Would you not just use manual then?
I'd use... it depends on what the trying effect I was going to get. I mean, I probably would put it on manual. But if you wanted to... Say if you were shooting here in the garden and you're off a tripod, I'd want a meter so that it wasn't... and if I was framing it, say, a video camera or something like that, then I'd want to know what I was getting from a specific area and not have it blow out because it was picking what it wanted to... It's you controlling it without having to go to manual.
You want a meter
so
to
what
measure
does it do?
How deep the water is.
Thank you, mate. Dipstick. And I don't mean you. I mean the dipstick for the water measurement.
So you're clear now, Dave? Or are you more confused than ever before?
Shall you explain what it does yet?
Shall we try Alex?
What, again?
You're up again, Alex.
Well, what part of the question are we talking about? I can handle low. There's no more tickets available. That bit's easy.
One thing I've never got my head around is the point
I think
of
you need to talk to Sarah about whether you can get the iTunes bit sorted out, because I think nobody other than Sarah even understands that part of the question.
Can you tell me what it does?
And the focus and the other bit. What was it?
What does it like?
Do you know what? You know what I do? Focus, I just press all the buttons, right, and be happy with whatever comes out, because I can't remember what the question was.
What does the button do? It's just autofocus, not exposure. Surely that's what you're asking, isn't it?
If you've got your camera, you do a part press to focus on the subject you want, and it also then meters off that subject, and then you reframe and full press to get the image. Well, what you can do with auto exposure and autofocus is the fact that you will set that and preset it, and then you will move the camera to frame the image and hit repeatedly without having to worry about the exposure and focus changing with whatever happens in the image.
Oh, that sounds like a useful application for it, yeah.
No, I mean, that's
the best explanation I've ever heard.
That's the what?
That's the best explanation of how that works that I've ever heard.
It's close enough.
No, I mean, it's like, you know, sometimes we say, look, stick the camera on auto if you're not sure what you're doing, and then look in the back of the camera and read off what numbers it's telling you, okay? And it's a similar thing to do that. Then we say sometimes take those numbers if you're not sure what the exposure is, and then put the camera on manual and enter those numbers. And it's another way of doing the same thing, but it's a way of doing it that you don't actually have to write down what the numbers on auto are and then put them in manually.
Mm-hmm. Can I ask a follow-up question to that?
No, you can't get tickets to the bash.
Oh, shit. I'll better go home then.
Is that another edit?
Yeah, probably.
Sarah, can you suss out explicit tags this week?
You might need to in a minute. When I take a picture on auto and I do the whole, you know, halfway press, it often doesn't choose the subject that I actually want it to focus on. It's obviously one or, you know, I appreciate that it usually picks the closest subject to the camera. Is there a better way to force it to pick a particular subject in the frame?
What sort of camera we're talking about? That's the point.
Well, it's the same on my point and shoot as on my DSLR. It tends to choose the closest subject to the frame automatically, but that's not necessarily the subject that I want it to.
And he's got a camera with face recognition.
But what camera is it? Be the easiest thing.
The DSLR. Well, I don't know.
No, what's happening there is it's evaluating the image before it does it. So you're not on spot metering, spot focusing. So you'll probably find that there's a double bracket, and in the centre there's a dot. And if the dot is a solid black dot, that's spot. If it's a circle, then it's probably evaluative within a region. And then if you've got it set for fully evaluated meeting, it'll do the whole image.
It brackets loads of spots, and it'll pick several spots, but it usually picks ones that not necessarily...
So you haven't got that on spot metering?
It's definitely not on spot, no.
There's normally a thumb dial in the back.
Fun.
I mean, it's just the cameras I use. It's a thumb dial. And what you do, as you're looking through, I think on a Canon you sort of turn it, and on a Nikon you sort of press up, down, left and right, etc. And what that will do is, while you're looking at it, you'll see that it's selecting various parts of the image that you can choose from as that point of either focus or exposure. And what you can do with your thumb is either on a Canon you go around on a dial, and on the Nikon up, down, left and right, and then you can change which one of those boxes you want it to use. So what it's doing, it's gridding up your picture and saying, I found five elements that might be useful for you. Which one do you want to use? And if you just carry on pressing auto, it will just pick whatever the one normally with the highest contrast in it is.
That's something I need to try. There was another question I had as well, following up on an earlier point someone made.
No, you can't get tickets for the bash. They're all gone.
What exactly would you use a sunroof for in Birmingham?
Hey, true though. I'd like an answer.
It's the place that you let Carl get some air when you're in a taxi cab.
Always me. My last question.
Don't have a Wookiee with you.
Last question. I don't think this is a serious question, but we'll never go. Hi guys, love the show. Can't get enough. I like the Top Gear podcast. It's like the Top Gear podcast. Great chemistry. My question is, how would you personify the major camera brands, i.e. Canon, Nikon, Sony, Pentax, Panasonic and Olympus? A fun question, but I'm interested in what the brands represent. I'm a Canon user, so it'd be interesting to hear how Canon compares to the other brands. Cheers, fellas, and keep up the great work. Lee of Bromsgrove.
Right, I think so we should all take Apple? A camera that we don't own. So that's all of us having Pentax, is it? Okay, I'll take Canon. Who does Canon personify? I think Canon personify Microsoft. Very
really?
Popular. Yeah, they're very popular. They do quite a lot of things pretty well, but at the moment they're not doing any of them brilliantly.
What do you say to
that's
that?
That's interesting, because I've always thought of Canon as more like the people that would normally be attracted to Canon would be the person that might use a Mac, whereas people might use Windows would be more attracted to Nikons.
Well, this is the point. That's why I said we should always pick one
because
we don't use.
Because I feel Nikon users are stuck-up jerks, so...
I think Canon users are wannabe Nikon users.
Why are you falling on this, Ewan?
I wasn't quite so offensive when I got the question through and had a think about it. I think it's a good question in that question. I'm drunk with no food. The idea of when someone says the word Canon, what pops in your mind? That's the idea of branding, is, you know, what do you instantly think of?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And I've always thought of Canon as being actually, they shoot a lot more green than any other camera I've ever used before. And I don't know why. They tend to. They enhance the greens more. Independent. Even when you change the films, when you had a... the old film cameras, they still seem to shoot a bit more green than everything else.
So what are you saying? They remind you of Kermit the Frog?
No, just if you say the word Canon, I say green. And that's kind of like the word association. I mean, some
that's
people
funny, because if you say
Mama,
Fuji, I say
green.
That's because the film's
sports.
Green. That's just... That's I don't know.
No. Fuji always shot green, and Kodak always shot red, as far as I was concerned. And I could cope with things being a bit too red, but... not too green. And you had the sort of, was it Agfa or the cheap films, and they were just very blue.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But as for
Konica,
camera manufacturers...
Konica was cyan, for sure.
I think. Yeah, I think, what was the other manufacturers? Because I've never heard of any others.
No, Alex makes a good point in that, and this is the frustration as a Canon user. They're doing a lot of good stuff, but they're not at pace with Nikon. So it becomes very difficult to, you know, a year ago, I was really feeling the hurt of thinking, do I jump ship or not? Now I'm not so bothered. So okay. I'm impressed more with the brand, but Alex is right in what he's saying. Nikon is ahead at the moment. I think Nikon is Nikon's a certain type of user. About, I don't want to say who.
Well, Alex.
Oh yeah. You know. Anyway, who wants to grab a mic and tell us what they think their camera represents?
Just shout some names out. Sure. And see what the first thing someone says.
Okay, so let's go through the list here. Okay, so Canon, first one.
Sports.
Anyone want to talk into a microphone?
Someone says to you, Canon, what's the first word that comes in your head?
Woohoo! Duck.
Video.
Bang.
Video.
Duck.
Better at video.
Absolutely okay. Better at video.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay, Nikon.
Expensive.
That was expensive.
Expensive.
Boring.
Independent.
Sony.
Who?
TVs.
Sony. Oh, okay. Okay, all right. Pentax.
Grainy.
Carl Swagger.
Anyone? Come on.
Nearly.
Small.
French. Really?
Small.
Carl Swagger.
Small.
Fun.
Panasonic.
Lumix.
Awesome.
Yeah.
last one.
Lumix.
Well, maybe. Olympus. Broke.
Stylus.
Yeah, yeah.
1970. So there you go. That's
David
around the
Bailey.
World. Well, that's the show. That's the first show from the Bash. It means I can pretty much go and get drunk after this, thank God. I'm always drunk for Worlds Apart. So I'd just like to thank... We'd like to thank...
Are you back to Worlds Apart there?
Where are you, Missy?
Anyway... So I'd like to thank TechSmith. For giving us all this, all the drink and all the food today.
TechSmith have paid for the pig roast and all the beer and stuff.
The Bash couldn't be happening without TechSmith today.
Where's Betsy gone? Where's she?
Betsy, where are you?
She's scared. She's
running
about
away.
To get spanked.
Thank you, Betsy.
Absolutely. Also, join us. Well, guys, where can we get hold of you? Let's go to Chris first today.
Should we go to UK too at some point?
Yeah, UK 2 are still going to pick all the bandwidth up for this rubbish, so. The only problem is we've got 50 people who aren't going to download it now.
So there'll be zero downloads.
Say their name and they're not going to download it.
Now, UK 2 do it, keep us online. They've been friends with us for over 3 years now. They suck up all our bandwidth costs, and without them, we really couldn't keep producing content every single week, no matter how much you tell us to stop. They have got some codes, and I read them out every single week, and I haven't got them in front of me at the moment. So.
VPS, VPN, server, domains.
Well, you come, you do a podcast, yeah. Get near the microphone.
British tech, and then you just add VPS, VPN, servers, domains, DNS, yeah, etc.
And there's another one.
I think there's a partridge in the pear tree one somewhere.
But I really do keep us going, so if you could show appreciation for us by buying something from them, it would be much appreciated.
Are we going to get... Where can we get hold of you?
It's a bit late now,
forever.
Dude. Bring it to me when we finish that bit.
DNS. British Tech DNS. DNS, that's the last one.
So once again, where can we get hold of you, Chris?
Well, you can get a hold of me at ArsTechnica.com, of course, because Ars Technica rules. I'm just saying. Also, Twitter, at ForzMac.
Now, you're going to go off and get drunk and join us here, in, at least spiritually.
And spirit, absolutely.
Absolutely. Lots of spirits. Alex, where can we get hold of you? And we know you're poorly, and that's why you can't be here today.
Yeah, you're going to get me in about 10 minutes back in bed, I'm afraid. But Alex G. Fox, for anything you want to get off your chest and have a go at someone, I'm your man.
Okay. And Ewan?
At Ewan Rankin on Twitter. That'll do.
And I'm Cole. You can get me at Claw0101 on Twitter. That's the photo show. Hope you enjoyed it. See you next time. Where's the beer?
Bandwidth and hosting for the British Tech Network is provided by UK2.net. Innovative, affordable, and reliable web hosting.